The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Jack Malvy is there, and he's with us now, Chief Global Market Strategist and Director of the BNY Mellon Center for Global Investment and Market Intelligence. Thank you so much for joining us, Jack.
Good morning.
Good morning. First of all, have to get your reaction to this morning's ECB moves, cutting interest rates and giving some more details about QE.
Relatively expected. I mean, we've been looking forward to this for quite some time, and particularly in the heels of some of the recent economic data in Europe, well warranted.
Well warranted. Is it enough?
Well, it's hard to know instantaneously, but I think through time we'll find out. There could be more down the road, to be sure.
All right. Is the downgrade to the inflation forecast and the growth forecast for this year and the downgrade to the growth forecast for next year particularly worrying for the euro area and also for the United States?
Well, certainly there have been some geopolitical events in the last several months which have affected the growth prognosis for Europe. I think it's less of a concern for the U.S. The recent data seems to be fairly encouraging. But to the extent that Europe does continue to slide a little bit more than previously expected, it could eventually ripple into the U.S. in 2015, but that's not our central view at this time.
Okay, not your central view. What about U.S. stocks then? Is this all that stocks needed for yet another leg higher in this bull market?
Well, we've been conditioned seemingly over the last 6 years, over the last 20 years, that when central banks move and encourage the markets, that it's beneficial, at least in the short run. But over the medium and long run, we'll have to see more substantive evidence that there's a fundamental effect in Europe. We also need to see, I think, a calming down of some of the geopolitical risk concerns which have harbored over the market over the last 6 months.
Okay, now many of the strategists that we've been speaking to on the program say these geopolitical risks, particularly Ukraine, Russia, and what's taking place in Iraq, Syria, and so forth, are very localized and won't have too much of a market impact. Is that beginning to change now that things are looking more serious?
Well, it's probably hard to generalize what all the strategists and portfolio managers think about geopolitical risks, but I think it's certainly, we've seen historically that sometimes these can gather and unfortunately come back in a stronger form. Well, hopefully the more benign view is correct that these tend to dissipate over the course of the next 6 months to a year. But at this point, we're not sure about that, so I think there will continue to be a cloud.
All right, Jack, you're very lucky to be in the beautiful New Hampshire for this wonderful conference, Bretton Woods Conference. I mean, you're surrounded by the top names in economics worldwide, including, you know, Yongding Yu, we just spoke with from the People's Bank of China formerly. We also have Otmar Issing coming on later on, one of the most influential European central bankers. What's the thing that you've learned so far that's most surprised you, most educated you, let's say?
Well, there's so many features here. I think that the realization that the financial system needs continued work in terms of enhancement of reform, enhancement of accuracy. So the system is something which is arguably and continuously in evolution. And I think it's an ongoing process which is going to require a lot of work. Our panel was on technology and innovation and what it means for the financial system, and I think that there are huge potential benefits moving forward of, for example, taking greater stock in some of the innovations in big data in terms of providing new information, which hopefully will guide policymakers in arranging a better system.
What kind of advances have we seen that perhaps the public and the investing public mightn't even be aware of yet?
Well, the framework continues to change. I mean, certainly the reforms that have been implemented in the U.S. and Europe, particularly around capital cushions, for example, in financial institutions, is certainly something which will continue to attract attention moving forward. I think a lot of the things that we're talking about, more thinking about the future as opposed to what's taking place already. I think that we've made great strides in finance, great strides in overseeing the system, but I think that we could do a better job on a prospective basis. There's so much information we don't have a real-time handle on yet. So what are capital flows on a real-time basis? What are spread sector performance on a real-time basis is presented through your wonderful Bloomberg terminals. We certainly look forward to, over the course of the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years, some of those coming online. And that information will, again, provide, hopefully, better framework for guiding the system.
All right, so some of that real-time information that we need, can you explain to us again what it is and why it might affect markets beneficially?
Well, for example, hypothetically, and just an example, we don't know last night how much capital flows went into Paraguay versus Uruguay versus Pakistan versus Thailand. And so capital flow data, which we get with a lag, would be good to have on a more real-time basis. We don't over the course of a day know how all spread sector securities are priced. So if you wanted to buy hypothetically an ETF, let's say in emerging markets or high yield or investment grade credit, would you know versus 1 o'clock versus 2 o'clock in the afternoon what the price of that, of the overall underlying securities would be? And the answer is no in this environment because index prices really are done effectively on a daily basis. So these are changes which ultimately will come.
Will that make markets more efficient? Will that make markets better in a sense, or knowing more, will it leave markets open to more manipulation?
Well, I think it will make markets better. I mean, certainly it's been in fixed income the holy grail to converge to real-time basis has been evident in equities for decades. So this increased efficiency and openness will be beneficial for the market. So I would not say it was something that leads to manipulation.
Okay. Jack, what are your clients most worried about at the moment? You're the Chief Global Market Strategist and Director at the Center for Investment and Market Intelligence at BNY Mellon. What are your clients asking you when they call you up?
Well, there's been interesting conversation recently about the divergence between low volatility and all the negative headlines. And some of the changes in, as we discussed earlier, the capital market outlook for Europe. So it is pretty amazing that volatility this summer 2014 reached the lowest point for debt, equity, commodities, and currencies on a composite basis in at least 25 years. A second consideration is geopolitical risk. How do you deal with it? How do you cope with it? How do you anticipate it? How do you construct scenarios? What should you really do? Those are some of the dominant themes in here. And, of course, the last one, as always, has been central bank communique and action parsing as we open the interview here with conversation in that direction as well.
Yes, indeed. Well, let me ask you, what are clients doing? Because it feels, to the investing public at least, that we're at a turning point. Would you say that we're very definitely at a turning point, or we don't know when that turning point is coming yet?
Well, it's hard to say that we're at a turning point. I think that we can say that over the last 6 years since the wonderful comeback from the 07-09 crisis, that we had a very strong uplift in risky assets. And I think we're in effectively, and we say in fixed income, a coupon clip mode, where we're partly because of inertia, partly because it's been still working, continuing to keep our allocation in those directions. But I think over the course of the next 2 to 3 years, one of the big questions will be, when does the cycle potentially turn? That's not a 14 or 15 consideration in all likelihood. But I think as we get deeper into this decade of the teens, there will be those who will be looking to avoid some of the pains of the last recession and be taking more defensive posture in markets. So I think that's a forward strategic question, which will certainly entertain capital market professionals over the next several years.
Certainly. When you're asked about this bull market, what is your opinion? Does it continue as long as there's QE in some part of the world?
I think that it will continue for some period of time, but again, the wild card is geopolitical risk.
That you think has the potential to actually end this 5 year plus bull market, at least in the United States?
Well, on a worst scenario cases, which is not a prediction, but certainly a possibility, there could be events over the course of the next several years which lead to market disruption, economic deceleration. And this is hardly a bold prediction because we look at the last several centuries, on average every 5 to 10 years, there's an event in capital markets which spoils things. And we look in the last 30, 40 years, whether it be Iraq, Kuwait in 1990, whether it be World Trade Center in 2001, and certainly the events in the Middle East over the recent months and as part of Eastern Europe as well.
Does that top the risk of exiting from zero interest rates, whether it be in the United States or eventually in Europe?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Do those geopolitical risks top the risk of exiting from zero interest rates in economies such as the U.S. and Europe?
I think those risks are at the top of the exogenous risk list, to be sure, I think over the course of 2015-16, the normalization of monetary policy in the U.S. and U.K., for example, will be certainly widely advertised and discussed theme. And there probably will be a speed bump or two in the markets as a result. We've seen this in 1994. We saw it in the middle of the first decade of the 21st century as well. But I think in relatively innocuous, and I'm sure there'd be a large trading flow based on that because it's been so well advertised and arguably should be well discounted in the marketplace.
Can I ask you what you're looking at in terms of U.S. yields? Are we going to see yields continue to be this low? And when does the Fed move?
Well, I've been personally, unfortunately, defensive in fixed income for quite some time, and that has not materialized. It's been a much better year than expected. A lot of folks have fallen into the similar category, but I do think over the next 2 to 3 years that U.S. yields will drift higher, partially initiated by normalization of Federal Reserve policy.
Would you care to suggest how high?
Well, of course, it depends on many factors, but if you were looking at 2017-2018, if, for example, the U.S. 10-year were trading with a 4% handle, it would not totally surprise.
What about currencies, Jack? We've talked fixed income and stocks. What about currencies? Is the euro going to go to parity
by
that time?
Well, the diminution of yield in Europe certainly is a discouragement for being as aggressively long in euro over the near term here, and we've seen dollar strength as a result. Surprise over the next 12, 15 months might be more the continued dollar strength. You have more yield with more yield coming on the way. You have stronger growth in Europe. You have a political cycle, which at least over the near term should be relatively benign as well.
Jack, if you were a regular investor, would you stay in U.S. stocks right now?
I would.
Jack Malvy, thank you so much for giving us all of your time. Very much appreciated. He was speaking to us from the Bretton Woods Conference taking place in New Hampshire. Jack Malvy is Chief Global Market Strategist Director of the BNY Mellon Center for Global Investment and Market Intelligence.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2014, Bloomberg LP.